This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
We bring you the Knowledge Bank as usual. And this morning we are going to change our focus. Go to the country of Namibia. For many reasons, actually, it is important to do that. One of those is an interesting article that we have here on the Knowledge Bank that came from Good Governance Africa's Africa, in fact, issue 57 on their publication on liberation movements, Africa's Long March Forward. And there was an article there about the Southwest Africa People's Organization, authored by Frederico Links, research associate at the Institute for Public Policy Research in Namibia. And guess what? Yesterday, 19 April, was the how manyth now anniversary since 1960. So that would be like the 61st anniversary of the founding of SWAPO in Namibia. So maybe this is quite an apt conversation to have here on Power Talk this morning. And also just to look, I mean, it's also 31 years since independence of Namibia. That was celebrated in March 2021. So let me welcome my guest, Frederico Links, on the line. Good morning and welcome to Power Talk.
Good morning, Lukona, and thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for joining us. Perhaps let's start at the point where the writer gets triggered. I mean, you write this piece on the GGA edition, SWAPO, Namibia's sinking ship. What made you want to reflect on the state of the organization and where it is today?
I mean, it is sort of similar to the South African situation. In a lot of respects, Namibia is sort of a microcosm, you know, politically and economically of, you know, sort of the things unfolding in South Africa at the moment. And part of this is that, I mean, similar to South Africa, the ruling party is in a state of decline. It is in a state of chaos. It is driven internally by factional fights, similar to the ANC in South Africa. And it's unclear, you know, how things will turn out. But what is clear is that, you know, the fate of the entire country, the socioeconomic fate, political fate of the country rides on, you know, what is busy playing out and how it plays out within the ruling party. So this is, you know, this is sort of where the concern is around the Namibian ruling party, SWAPO, as it is similar to what's happening in South Africa around the ANC.
Absolutely. And I mean, you start off there reflecting just on how President Hage Geingob, you know, comes up with these themes for the year. And he had a theme, year of introspection. At times, politicians give us these themes and do not adhere to them. Would you say that year of introspection and them coming back from the 2019 elections with, you know, we have heard you saying to the people they've listened, because, I mean, it was quite a significant loss of electoral outcomes for SWAPO there. How would you marry these slogans that politicians use with what you have observed in the country and in the organization itself?
So, I mean, that particular you know, theme for 2020, last year's theme, the year of introspection, that's how we labeled the year. And that was following that, you know, that sort of decline in support from the November 2019 election. And then also, I mean, we had the big fish rot scandal, corruption scandal break just shortly before the elections, and then, you know, some more of the revelations immediately after the elections. And this is still ongoing. I mean, today there are some more stories around the scandal in the local newspapers and so on. So the situation was that, you know, there seems to have been an immediate consequence corruption scandal, which came sort of, you know, on the on the heels of sort of long-standing economic deterioration, you know, over the last few years, since about 2016, the Namibian economy has been in a sharp decline. We're very much commodity. Our economy very much rides on commodities, you know, sort of the mining sector, and other, you know, tourism and the like. And there have been a lot of job losses and company closures and the like. And we've had this devastating drought since about 2016 up to about 2019. And then you have this big corruption scandal in which high-placed politicians, ministers, and politically connected business people all are connected, and the ruling party is implicated, and then ultimately the president is implicated. And people turned out, people, you know, if you look at social media and especially the youth and the sort of, you know, the sort of sentiment that you hear people expressing on social media, every time, you know, sort of the president or high, you know, high government officials make statements, the sort of comments that you see accompany this, the mockery, the contempt, you get a sense of where Namibians are at this stage in time. And so that slogan, the year of introspection, it didn't resonate, because, you know, people kept on seeing the same things, the same occurrences, the continuous corruption breaking and nothing being done, then being no accountability, rather a lot of defensiveness. And for a lot of people, you know, this theme rang hollow because action wasn't being taken around these issues. So, I mean, that and still, I mean, people are still on about this, making fun of these sorts of themes that you know, are being rolled out. And yet they don't speak to reality of you know, political action or state action around the things that people really want to see accountability around.
I mean, Federico, you talk as well about, you know, the state of opposition parties. At times it is said that one party dominance is exacerbated by a weak presence of the opposition. But how do you take us through the landscape there in Namibia insofar as opposition politics are concerned, the ability for them to operate unhindered and for them to, you know, recruit and do electioneering without necessarily facing any restrictions from the dominant party, which has been SWAPO for all these years?
It is true. I mean, and we've been saying this for a long time, you know, we need to move to a new type of politics here in Namibia, probably in South Africa as well. I mean, the single dominant party system isn't working for us. But I mean, the problem is also that, you know, the opposition parties they aren't really all that credible. I mean, a lot of people, even though they might like some of the politicians in, for instance, the PDM, the Popular Democratic Movement, which is the official opposition, you know, the PDM is what used to be the DTA, Democratic Turnhulle Alliance, which was created by apartheid authorities in the late 1970s. When some national party politicians broke away and formed this DTA with some tribally based parties. So, I mean, it can't get away from that history. So even if I wanted to, for instance, vote like some of the politicians, I can't get over that hurdle of that historical legacy of PDM, for instance.
Yeah.
So even if a lot of people like the PDM president, they can't, you know, sort of stomach the thought of voting for this former apartheid collaborator, this party. So they rather give their votes to sort of smaller, weaker parties. And then, you know, what you have is this fractured opposition landscape, which is very much and has been for a few election cycles now, has been sort of, you know, tribally dominated, where we're increasingly seeing people voting in tribal blocks within our political parties, where ethnic groups are going with the with the parties that reflect the sort of a leadership base that reflects a specific ethnic group. And it's problematic because it's turning our politics into this tribalist, this ethnic and tribal-based political landscape.
Mm.
And on the other hand, then SWAPO tries to sell itself as, this catch-all umbrella of all ethnic groups, which is true. I mean, you have to give the ruling party that.
Yeah.
It captures, people from all ethnic groups in Namibia. So, so that also then is something that counts against, your opposition parties. It isn't the one thing. This landscape is sort of shifting but it remains a problematic landscape, the opposition, political opposition landscape.
A problematic.
It's going in, how they figure out going forward, how they figure out how they're going to take on the ruling party and capitalize on its continuing weakness and what looks like an inevitable decline and deterioration in support over the next decade.
Yeah.
How they do that.
I'm joined by Federico Links, all the way from Namibia, dissecting a paper that he wrote dealing with, SWAPO, Southwest Africa People's Organization, saying Namibia's sinking ship, and we're trying to understand the political landscape. That line, if you want to be part of our conversation, is 0861-987-000 here on Power98.7. And as always, you can tweet me at LukonaMnguni. Hashtag Power Talk, so that you become part of this conversation. Definitely long historic ties between the two countries, South Africa and Namibia, SWAPO and the ANC being allies. I mean, there were people, liberation fighters from Namibia also incarcerated at Robben Island, and we are looking at that moment. Now, founded 19 April 1960, SWAPO was, but as my guest seems to suggest, suddenly in some state of decline, which could be permanent. Federico, you also talk about, tendencies where hardliners within the SWAPO leadership, such as the defense minister, Peter Vilo, seize the opportunity to issue veiled threats to unnamed political foes from prominent public platforms in 2020. That kind of rhetoric that tends to come from powerful people, how was that, how do those veiled threats get made? And how are they affecting the space for activism within the country?
Well, I'll start with the last bit of your question there first.
Yeah.
I mean, it has actually inflamed, this youth-led social media uprising against the ruling elite in Namibia, where all it's done is sort of shine the spotlight even brighter on individuals such as Bilo, and he's since now resigned. He's been asked to resign from government, so he's no longer a minister because of social media based exposure by one of the leading youth movement protagonists here in the country, who exposed alleged instances of corruption under Vilo at the Ministry of Defence, and last month earlier this month, I'm not quite certain.
Yeah,
he was actually summoned to State House, and he on that day sort of handed in his resignation letter because of the social media campaign against him, because he was out there, at military functions, where they have officer graduations and things. He would use those platforms over the last year, especially between the two elections, the November 2019 and the November 2020 elections, to make sort of threatening, veiled, intimidatory statements about, we're coming for you. And you saw this. We saw this coming from the the police chief as well last year, where he was also threatening to come for youth activists and young people in general on social media who, sort of in inverted commas, were disrespecting senior leaders and the like. So these sort of threats against people expressing themselves, young people especially on social media, labeling them, this is un-African and so on, and trying to intimidate youth activists. And using these platforms and their positions in the state security sector, in the military and the like, to try and intimidate people into silence, and it's backfired. Mm. And this is what's present, and it will continue to happen. I mean, just over the last 2 weeks, I mean, we've had some instances of that sort of that ilk, and where you had political activists call press conferences and saying, this is just going to make us become even more radical.
Yeah.
This sort of conduct, these sorts of threats, these sorts of statements by a very compromised political elite in Namibia. And this is what, it's not having the effect of cowing down these young people. It's not having the effect of silencing them. It's actually, having the opposite effect when people like Vilo have gone out there. And this too has sort of, this has become an embarrassment for the ruling party as well. Because now it seems that, the party leaders don't have a grip on, senior members are going out there and just making statements and making speeches that then have to be walked back or defensively explained away by the ruling party and they're sort of continuously backed into a corner by their own senior operatives, by their own senior representatives in government and so on, because of these sorts of statements and on these prominent platforms.
I mean, someone listening in on this conversation, Sipho, says you could swear you are talking about our country in terms of some of the issues that you are dissecting there. And, you talk about the ruling party being quite representative of the entire cultural makeup of the society, and this is what actually entrenches dominance. We see it here with the African National Congress, which fashions itself as the broad church, as a home to everybody and having everybody finding representation. And this question around young people is always a fascinating one as to how they get co-opted in some instances, especially in political parties. I mean, you state to us something quite interesting there, Namibia Exile Kids Association. What is that all about, Federico? And I mean, how much influence do these kids, quote unquote, have on the political landscape?
Well, I mean, I would also like to know what the status is of NECA within, Swapo politics. But I mean, these exile kids, the kids of the liberation struggle have had the effect of, we recently had, I think it was a high court judgment where the government over the last few years, they were lobbied by a lot of these kids former Swapo kids who were unemployed and, destitute and so on. And they were marching over the last decade or so. Most of the last decade, we've had the struggle kid issue sort of simmering on the political landscape. And, they've been running skirmishes with the police and protests at the Swapo head HQ here in Windhoek and at various government offices and so on. And the ruling party has tried to use the state to try and appease these Swapo kids and directing that they should be prioritized for employment in low level government jobs, sort of a cleaner and you know, and janitor sort of levels, because a lot of them don't have skills, haven't finished school and so forth, and come from the rural areas. And these kids have been sort of posted around the country. And what you've had when this has happened around the country is then unemployed young people in these villages and towns where these Swapo kids are then given jobs to be school janitors and school cleaners, or at hospitals and government offices and the like at local levels and regional levels.
Yeah.
Then you had the local youth. We've had seen this over the last few years. The local youth then protesting against the local unemployed youth then protesting against these Swapo kids then being prioritized and given jobs where they are available locally to get these jobs. So you had this tension then emerging. And this is part of how, you know, and a movement such as the Landless People's Movement, for instance, which is has its a power base in the south of the country, has been able to attract support because of, you know, something like this that the ruling party has done, sending a lot of the struggle kids to these southern towns and villages where they got these low-level, low-paying jobs in the government service, when there actually were a lot of unemployed young people in these towns and villages that should have been prioritized for these jobs. And we had a ruling by, I think it's the High Court, I'm not certain, either High Court or Supreme Court, just I think over the last 2 or 3 weeks, that actually found that this scheme, this employment scheme for struggle kids, was illegal, sort of justifying what critics have been saying for a while. But then you have this tension then, and this, I think, has contributed to the ruling party losing support amongst a lot of young people in the southern parts of the country. And their families, of course, because it's not just the young person, it's also the parents who are also unemployed and hoping for kids to get a job and earn something to support the household and the like. And then something like this happens. So, I mean, these sorts of tensions have sort of played into, the emergence, the very surprising emergence, I'd say, the strength of the turnout that happened for the Landless People's Movement, for instance.
Federico, I'm going to be back with you shortly after news headlines as we continue with our Knowledge Bank here, dissecting your paper, really talking about Namibia's sinking ship, dissecting matters within SWAPO and the similarities between South Africa and Namibia. Continue to write themselves in your article, because you also point to the ruling party's 2022 Congress, which could be defining in terms of the future of SWAPO in Namibia, and also here in South Africa. We anticipate that 2022 elective conference of the African National Congress, which I also think will be defining in many ways. 0861 987 000, if you want to be in conversation with us here on the Knowledge Bank as we continue with our intellectual deposits. But let's go to the Power News headlines.
Power Talk with Lukhona Mgwini. Call Lukhona on 0861 987 000.
Indeed, let us get talking. It is 26 minutes to 12 in this last segment as we bring you the Knowledge Bank, discussing SWAPO, Namibia's sinking ship, an article written by Federico Links there. And Federico, I'm just going to ask you to hold the line as I take a few calls. You just make some notes so that you can be able to respond. Hamlet, good morning.
Good morning to you, Lucan, and to your guest there. Very interesting topic, and I think your guest should have termed, I mean, his article, I mean, Africa's sinking ship, because of, I mean, what he has written about. I mean, it's what most, I mean, African states suffer from. Corruption is a pandemic across, I mean, the continent, because of, in my assessment, most of these liberation movements are driven by only one thing: to grow political base, so that, I mean, their program every 5 years, it could keep them in power and it can keep them. You've said something very, very interesting, but very dangerous. A one-state political party that deeply entrenches itself in society, its concern is not developmental.
Mm.
Its concern is not to uplift and to meet, I mean, the aspiration of our people, but it's a program that is self-serving, that you, when you look at them across, they are more concerned about, you know, the strong political base than any development program. And for me, that signifies that they want to be relevant for as long as it takes. But even though they don't represent the aspirations of people, when you look at the People's Action Party in Singapore, which I think, I mean, the model of that political party, it's hinged on developmental state. It's hinged on, you know, being one of the best, I mean, you know, democracies in the world. I mean, I think it's a stateless, corrupt country because of the way the party has positioned itself in society. It speaks about development,
yeah,
but it's totally different from our continent.
Hamlet, thank you very much for that intervention. Let's go to Rudeport. Hichevi, good morning.
Hi, Anton, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I would like to take this from a different perspective, and how do you guess there, Mr. Link?
Hichevi, can you just get closer to your mic? I'm seemingly struggling to hear you properly.
Is it much better?
A little better, yeah.
Okay. I would like to take this from a little bit of a different perspective, and how do you guess, Mr. Link?
Mm.
I think what we are experiencing now in the Namibia situation, particularly the ruling party, is that the liberator has become the enslaver of its own people.
Hichevi, just repeat that again.
I was saying
that
the
better.
Liberators of the people have now become the enslavers of its own people.
Mm.
Now, this is quite true in the instance of SWAPO, because now just to correct a little bit of a factual issue, that although SWAPO was formed in 1960, April, SWAPO, and it's important to have a historical perspective on these things and to understand why the party is what it is now and where it comes from. SWAPO was not the first National Liberation Party. The first National Liberation Party was SWANU, to be formed in September of 1959, and I think Mr. Lenz will agree with that. SWAPO itself was a breakaway of a formation of a tribe. It was called the Ovambo People's Organization, which in 1959 had joined SWANU, the first National Liberation Party, but broke away because of the SWANU as itself at its core had a very aggressive socialist agenda, which it still does today. And SWAPO broke away from that because it didn't want to align itself with that kind of aggressive social. But the essence of that is that still in SWAPO's policy, it still has a socialist, it expresses in its documents the socialist view economically.
Mm.
Now, that is relevant to what is happening today and the corruption that Mr. Lynx was talking about. Sometimes what people say and what people do not consistent with one another.
Mm.
SWAPO is no longer in the socialist. In fact, Mr. Lynx will probably attest to this. Last week, the president, Mr. Agi Gainkop, said that it was perhaps a mistake to adopt the socialist approach economically.
Mm.
Now, although he says that, the SWAPO policy remains a socialist one. Although in conduct it's not expressed as a socialist, it's very much capitalistic. The constitution says Namibia has a mixed economy, which means that it's a mixture of socialism and capitalism mixed together in one. Now, the relevance of what I'm saying is quite important, because Marcus Garvey in 1926 in New York said that a leadership that will make you depend upon another race is the leadership that will enslave you. And and the corruption is as a result of a lack of leadership will to carry on or to change any aspect or the plight of its people. Now, obviously the corruption, or not the corruption necessarily, but the fragmentation within SWAPO and perhaps its bleak future is not only a reflection upon SWAPO itself, but it's a reflection upon the country. Just as ANC's impact or dysfunctions within the party has a huge, massive impact nationally.
Okay. Hichevi, let's wrap up.
No, so what I want to say is that it has to be a will of countries to change. This is not going to be something that's going to be legislated. So the conversation should not be limited alone to SWAPO, but that the impact of national party fragmentations have an impact on a national scale as well.
Absolutely.
And that's quite important.
Hichevi, thank you very much for that intervention. Steve, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Lukwana and your guest. I'm actually surprised that the DTA is still as significant as your guest actually suggests.
Mm.
I'd love to know at what point, did the DTA entrench itself in Namibian politics? I mean, that's the one thing. The other is that, it seems to me that SWAPO, in fact, until now, I was under the impression that SWAPO extracted a little more, out of the post-Quito Cannavalo, political scenario than the ANC would have. And that for that reason, it would have had a great deal more leverage, just in terms of, redressing past injustices. But, I'm actually surprised that it hasn't. And finally, how do we explain Anton Lebowski and him getting murdered in South Africa at the fluid moment of 92 to 93. I thought maybe your guest might have a sense of what was happening there. A great deal of intrigue.
Okay. Before I let you go, Steve Frederico, did you get all of this in?
Yeah, I did.
Pardon?
Okay. Thank you, Steve. I'll give you a chance now. Frederico, please, some reflections on those thoughts shared by some of our callers.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in a full agreement with just about everything Hichevi said. The issues are so myriad around what's busy happening on the social political landscape. Same here in Namibia as it is in South Africa. For me as an observer, Namibia is sort of a microcosm of what's happening and what's playing out in South Africa around the ANC, because we have the same issues that are undermining sort of our politics and our society. The first caller spoke about, this is reflective of what's happening to liberation parties across the continent. That was the point of this issue of good governance of Africa. In fact, looking at how similar the trajectories, and if you look at the history books on political science and so forth, and you look at some of what's busy unfolding in our part of the world, it's clear this. And you look at the writings of scribes such as Frantz van Noorn and the like, and you see just how a lot of this was very predictable, and how things fall apart, how predictable and inevitable it seems to be. It's just amazing always for me. And you sort of wonder, do people not engage with history and see how things go wrong and then try and not become, just another case study in a long line of case studies on political collapse of say, an organizational movement? Or is it that, these things take on a life of their own, that there is no room for self-correction?
Yeah.
As on when, this deterioration sets in, and really there's very little that can be done at that stage, because the interests and the agendas are so diffuse and disparate that, it really would, it isn't up to one person. That at that point, does strong leadership actually make a difference? because there are so many centers of power in the organization. And that's what's busy playing out in the ANC as well. You know, the centers of power and the push and pull of, you know, who is actually who and where are things are going. And that's the same things busy playing out within the ruling party in Namibia. Yeah. And using state resources and the like to this giant patronage network. As your last caller pointed out, you know, and I think this is what has led to the sort of emergence of the DTA / PDM. Mm. You know, a lot of us thought this party, this apartheid creation was on its way out over the last, you know, since around 2000 through to 2015, it looked like, you know, DTA, you know, was up to about 2014, looked like DTA was, you know, sort of a spent force in Namibian politics when it was still something in the 90s. Mm. And then, you know, I think it has been reinvigorated by the missteps and the shortcomings and the weaknesses of the ruling party, that this political party has now sort of seen itself reemerge again as the official opposition in our parliament. These things are striking. I mean, what they mean at this point in time, as you know, these things are still busy unfolding. So I'd be very hesitant to take
a definitive stance on them.
Yeah, exactly. To want to express certainties at where things are going and headed and so on at this stage. I don't think I want to do that.
Yeah.
But you know, I think this is part of, as the last caller sort of intimated, you know, that it's because the ruling party failed to live up to the promise, failed to capitalize on that honeymoon period we had in the 1990s to really, you know, spur us on and get us onto, you know, something like a Singapore example, you know, becoming this African example, and a new sort of African politics, a new sort of African state, turning the corner on history, and it didn't happen. It went the way of liberation movements on this continent. It's going the way of liberation movements on this continent. The ZANU-PFs, the ANCs, the various others across the continent that have failed to live up to the promise of freedom, of democracy, of delivery to the people, and that's where Hishibi pointed out, spoke about the socialist agenda. I mean, the president made that speech, and if you look at the comments afterwards on social media and from commentators, I mean, SWAPO didn't, you know, they you know, in the election manifestos, they talk a great socialist game, you know, but you know, that's not in practice. They don't walk the talk.
The policies are not there, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, the talk is very much self-interest driven, cornering state resources, cornering licenses. It's very individualistic in its capitalist outlook in terms of who benefits. I mean, we just had an auctioning. We just had the issuance of fishing rights again, and in the newspapers over the last few days. I mean, how the political elites, those associated with politically exposed persons, have once again managed to be involved in the fishing sector through these briefcase companies and continuing to turn this already corruption tainted sector into continuing the rent seeking that is happening in the sector, where this is part of the patronage network, where people get fishing quotas, the politically connected, as part of their continued support.
For
the program of the ruling party.
Federico Steve also dealt with, there were a number of assassinations, of course, of Namibian politicians in South Africa. I think he spoke about Anton, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, is there any view that you have on that particular question, talking about moment of the early 90s?
Yeah, Anton Lubowski's wife continues to, from South Africa, she continues to want Namibian authorities to engage with what happened, I think she wants there to be some sort of commission of inquiry into what actually transpired around the assassination of Lubowski. I think she's, I mean, certainly the political elite here, the senior ruling party people aren't interested. I mean, it's clear. I mean, they're not interested in going there. I think she and some of some others who want to see this resolved, are shouting into the wind here. Even Lubowski's erstwhile sort of supporters and associates aren't pushing for this. I don't think it will go anywhere. A lot of, what's happened has in sort of immediately before independence in 1990 and afterwards through the 90s, a lot of our young people aren't aware of these historical occurrences. Even up to, sort of immediate period up to 2000, that 10-year period, which was sort of our honeymoon period where Namibia could have really gone another way and becoming really this African example that we sort of were looked to becoming. A lot of our population is largely a youth population. So a lot of this history isn't available to our young people through the schools and so on. So they're unaware of these things. So it's these old activists and sort of people on the fringes and historians and the like who are aware of these things, who continue to keep these sort of embers burning. But, you can just see how eventually, as they become silent, as they die out and so on, that these issues then, also die with them and aren't ever really addressed in any way that will satisfy, sort of the calls that they've made over the years.
Yeah. We are on the Knowledge Bank with Federico Links here discussing SWAPO, Namibia's sinking ship, a reflection really of an article that he contributed into Africa. In fact, I mean, Federico, you write about the importance of 2022 for SWAPO and that it could be defining, because that's where the successor to the current president, Geingob, will be elected. Are there already emerging things that you are starting to see and as an indicator that the succession battle is really on within SWAPO?
Yeah, I mean, but you hear a lot of things around, these sorts of emerging congresses and things, a lot of speculation, a lot of rumor mongering, a lot of disinformation. And that's also, something that's very marked about sort of the information around the ruling party over the last decade, is that it's become a very toxic disinformation landscape.
Yeah.
And you you don't want to tread into this factional quagmire where they are trying to outdo each other with the mudslinging. So there's a lot happening. And that's why in the article, I mean, I quote one of my sources saying it could be a bloodbath, the Congress next year. I mean, the last Congress in 2017 was a fractious affair where they had to issue statements sort of calling on comrades to please, you know, stop it, just stop it. You know, it was a 3-day thing. And by the second day, it was just the leaks to the media, the toxic sort of postings on social media, the factional tribalistic statements coming out of factions and supporters of factions and affiliated factions and so on. You know, it was just by the second day they had to issue a statement at the 2017 Congress just asking comrades, members, please, just can we just stop this? And of course, I mean, it didn't stop. I mean, the intervening years have seen things just get worse.
And it keeps going. I mean, but who are some of the people that you will be looking out to as potential successors if the Congress goes ahead and there's actually contestation if it happens?
Well, I mean, it's unclear who Dangob is looking to take the reins. So he might actually stand again for party president. I think he will stand again for party president. And then maybe in the next conference 5 years down the line, Congress 5 years down the line, maybe then when a more clear cut successor has emerged, then, you know, maybe then there will be a handing over of the reins. But at the moment, I mean, it's unclear. And we've sort of been, I've been asking some of the more knowledgeable commentators and observers here as well. I mean, what are we seeing any sort of clear successor emerge here? And not really. I mean, probably once we get, you know, sort of into the second half of the year this year, and into early 2022, I'd be in a better position to probably,
deal with some of the personalities.
But I mean, at the moment, I'm hesitant to do that. But that also, I think, speaks to how the ruling party has not, you know, adequately dealt with the issue of succession, which is also speaks to, I think, to, you know, sort of a leadership issue and a lack of leadership that some of your callers have pointed to. And succession is something that is vitally important to you know, sort of the continued prestige of a political party. And they're mishandling this, similar to, you know, how you know, once again, the ANC is also how these factional fights have also come to sort of damage the leadership of the ANC in South Africa.
Absolutely.
And that's busy happening here as well. I mean, where you, the succession issue is, you know, we're all at the end of the day hoping that we don't have to make a choice from amongst the bad bunch.
Absolutely, Federico, and I think that's our views here in South Africa as well. I am a little out of time, but let me thank you for engaging us and joining us here on Power Talk.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.